No, it's beautiful weather, and there are huge numbers of people around Killarney over the last number of days. And the reason is because a number of citizenship ceremonies have been taking place. Around 4,600 people over the 2 days from more than 139 countries will become Irish citizens at the citizenship ceremonies. Applicants from almost every country, county on the island, including Kerry, will make a declaration of fidelity and loyalty to the state as they officially receive Irish citizenship. Five ceremonies held over the 2 days in the INEC in the Linegal. The presiding officer at the ceremonies is Judge Paddy McMahon, who will confer the attendees with Irish citizenship. He'll administer a declaration of fidelity to the Irish nation and loyalty to the state. Minister of State, newly minted Minister for State at the Department of Agriculture, Niall Collins, is one of those who is participating at the event, and he's with me in our studio here this morning. Minister, good morning to you, and thanks for joining me in the programme.
Good morning.
Listen, 4,600 new citizens for the Irish state. Our population is growing. That brings with it its own pressures, and with that in mind, the European Union and we here in Ireland are changing our migration rules, making it a bit more difficult to become a citizen.
Yeah, well, this is, I suppose, this is different to the EU migration pact, which was which we opted into, which became effective from last week. So what's happening today is, as you pointed out, 4,600 people across yesterday and today are being conferred with Irish citizenship. These are people who have been living and working and contributing to Ireland and to their community and to the Irish economy and society for a long number of years. You have to be here at least 5 years before you can become a citizen. You have to apply, you have to demonstrate that you're a person of good character and that you will be able to be a productive member of society. So it's not a straightforward process. You have to have continuous residency here for the last 12 months, with the exception of a small number of days where you're allowed to leave the country for holidays or for business or work purposes. So these are people who have come in to Ireland legally, the vast majority of them. I suppose about 98% of the people who are being conferred with citizenship across yesterday and today would have come into Ireland legally, through proper channels where they would have work permits and proper visas and all the rest. There's a small number of people who would have been granted international protection and who ultimately have worked their way into a position where they now qualify for citizenship. That equates to about 2% of the total.
Do you think people confuse that in the wider debate on migration?
Absolutely.
Some people
absolutely.
Accidentally, other people intentionally.
Yeah.
Suggesting that our growth in population is all down to people who are landing on our shores claiming asylum.
Yeah, absolutely. The conflation between legal migration and illegal migration is huge, and it clouds the whole debate around illegal migration and asylum seeking, and it doesn't help. Obviously, there's people out there who have an agenda to try and undermine government, to try and undermine the state, to try and undermine our public services, and you see it on social media. Those people actively conflate the two and take any opportunity to try and confuse people and to, you know, blur the lines of differentiation. And I think it's important, if you take the figures for 2004, which were readily available, about 230,000 people migrated into Ireland in the year 2024. The vast majority of those were people on work permits, legally coming to Ireland. They were returning Irish emigrants from abroad. They were people from the European Union or the United Kingdom who have a right to travel here, freedom of movement of people, be it part of the European Union or the common travel area. Of the 240,000 people that came into Ireland, and 2024 was a very high year for asylum seekers, 18,000 of the 240 were people who came here seeking asylum. And they've obviously, that number has dropped hugely since 2024. It took a significant dip down to just over 12,000 last year. And it's trending downwards again this year. The month-on-month figures are trending downwards. So we did experience a spike across a number of years when we came out of COVID, as you know. And that put a lot of pressure, particularly on accommodation, like you saw here in Killarney. That was allied also with the Ukrainian response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So I suppose we had a perfect storm for a number of years in relation to it. But you're right, the vast majority of migration into this country is legal. It's proper, it's managed, it's permitted, it's properly controlled by Department of Justice, the Department of Enterprise, who are the two, I suppose, overseeing authorities in terms of giving people work permits and visas to enter the country.
So with that in mind, in terms of the numbers coming in claiming asylum, that's been a problem or an issue across Europe. And this migration pact has taken a number of years to come true. We're getting stricter in relation to it. We've shared information with other countries. We're promising a faster, more efficient asylum service. Will the Department of Justice be able to deal with that? You're a former minister there.
Absolutely.
In terms of resources and the demands on them.
Because since, and you have spoken to him since Jim O'Callaghan and myself entered the Department of Justice back after the last general election, and I just vacated in the last 2 weeks, as you've pointed out, to move to agriculture. We introduced a whole pile of new procedures. We brought in a lot of people to ramp up the resource that we had within the department to process applications a lot quicker. So applications are now being processed a lot quicker. But significantly, one of the changes we made was we hugely increased the list of what's called safe countries. So if you come to Ireland from a safe country, which what we deem a safe country, the likes of Georgia, for example, or the likes of Nigeria, you're now deemed, there's an automatic presumption that you won't be entitled to international protection. And that has now followed through into you can see it in the data for the decisions. The vast majority of decisions which are now made in the first instance from people who come from these safe, what we term safe countries, in excess of 80% of those asylum or international protection applications are now refused in the first instance. Mm. Now, many of them do appeal, many of them leave, many of them don't pursue it. So we're getting on top of it. But most significantly, we've also commenced, and there's been a lot of frequency of this, is the deportations of people from Ireland, and rightly so, because that gives out a very strong message internationally that if you come to Ireland, you can apply for international protection, of course. It's our obligation under international law to allow you to apply for international protection. But we will assess it in a speedily, in a timely manner. You'll get a decision. If you get a decision that you're not entitled to international protection in this country, you'll be asked to leave in the first instance. If you don't leave, you'll be offered assistance to leave. And if you don't leave on that occasion, you'll ultimately be deported. And I think that's very, very important that we have a robust system.
What would you say to those and the critics, both from opposition parties, but also human rights groups here, saying that you're moving to the right on migration and this idea of the European idea of a third country, an outside hub in a country which maybe doesn't have a great human rights record, I know it's yet to be worked out, that is the wrong road to go down. The Rwanda policy, to use the UK.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that criticism. I think we have to have, look, we've had a system for years that just had really drift, you know, just drifted and drifted, and the numbers just languished. For the individuals themselves who came here seeking international protection, it wasn't fair on them that they were languishing in a system which went on forever and ever and ever and ultimately didn't give them a determination in a timely manner. I think we've solved that and people are now getting early decisions. But we have to have a decision that has an end point. And the end point is that if you don't get a decision where you're allowed to stay, you have to leave. And part of the EU Migration Pact is a common approach right around the European Union. The European Union 27. You see, if you're not part of the European Union in terms of the Migration Pact, migrants will pick the weakest link in the chain, and they will look to countries that have that have a weakness, and they will tend to migrate and gravitate in that direction. So that's why we're part of the EU 27. And in terms of building what you call reception centres or holding centres, all of that will have a proper human rights and standard, quality standard in terms of how that's all managed. And it is to be worked out. And I think really at the centre of all of this, we have to obviously keep uppermost in our mind that we're dealing with human beings, we're dealing with people who have come from awful circumstances, people who have experienced war, famine, climate change, persecution. So there is a human element in it, obviously. But it's something that we have to manage. As a government, we have to try and manage migration. Migration has been here, has been, around the world since time began. And I really have to try and push back sometimes against the glib criticism that people throw at government when they do conflate all forms of migration. Asher, you're letting them in, and why are you bringing in these people? You get those kind of statements thrown at you. That's not the way it is. Migration has been here since time began. It's a global phenomenon, and we have to try and manage it. We have to try and manage it as a societal response. It puts huge pressure on society, on community, on the exchequer. And at the same time, we have to have a human rights-based approach. So it's about getting the balance right, and but ensuring that you have a firm, fair and a responsive system that gives an early decision and has a final follow-through.
Okay, and more to be worked on that as the new rules take effect. Onto your new job now, Minister for State Department of Agriculture. You're walking around in Michael Healy Ray's shoes. How does it feel?
Yeah, well, he made, to his credit, I'm in the department now about three and a half weeks. He made a big impression during his time there. I will absolutely acknowledge that. I've been meeting all of the stakeholders since I took over this role, and they all speak very highly of him. Look, my own view is he's a loss to government. I was disappointed that he resigned from government. Obviously, it was his own decision. I heard your interview with him, which was quite extensive. I think the whole of Ireland heard that. But look, at the end of the day, the work of government has to go on. Forestry, horticulture, farm safety, they're the three core areas of responsibility. They're very, very important to people who are engaged, obviously, in forestry, horticulture. Farm safety is a huge issue this time of year. Farming is at its peak, as you know. Farm accidents tend to be quite brutal and often fatal, unfortunately, as we know, and we have to try and create an awareness and a greater awareness out there amongst people as to the dangers that there are in farm settings, because whilst they're workplaces, there's extreme risk, obviously this time of year, particularly with machinery and particularly young people being off school as well. It's a huge concern. So we're embarking now on a roadshow across our primary schools in particular to try and bring that education and awareness piece to our younger people and try and get it into their heads at a younger age.
Okay, and with that in mind, in forestry, one of the big issues that Deputy Michael Healy Ray, then Minister Michael Healy Ray, was trying to tackle was the logjam in licensing, the processing to get things moving quicker. Is that something that you're going to be able to tackle?
That is something which he had dealt with prior when he was in office. It dealt with quite successfully, and I haven't been receiving the complaints, any complaints in relation to that. It is working better. It's moving quicker. The forestry premium rates were increased by Michael Healy Ray when he was in the job. That's something which was received very well by the forestry community. It's a big, I suppose, it's a big part of our program for government to try and increase the amount of forestry we have. Not an easy task, because there's huge competition for land use. Farming is going reasonably well. Farmers will never admit, as we know, and we all have a bit of a farmer in us. They'll never say farming is going great or going well, but it's going reasonably well. So there is alternative land uses, as we know. There is alternative returns on income for different types of land uses. So in terms of forestry and trying to grow the amount of forestry that we have from about 11% to about 18%. Is the target is a big target to try and achieve, but I'm hugely impressed and encouraged by the whole industry that's around forestry. The whole supply chain, the whole way that construction is going in terms of timber frame and the use of Irish timbers in the construction sector. So it's a very viable and it's a very commercially aware sector, and I think there's a lot going on in it.
Okay, you mentioned the programme for government there. One of the key platforms, key planks, is to develop and to increase supply. You mentioned construction there of housing. We're seeing another report out this morning, the DAF sales report, which shows that in Dublin, figures slightly starting to drop in terms of sales. Munster, Connacht, Ulster, though, very strong asking price growth year on year. This is the biggest issue for your government. Are you failing?
No.
We're
not failing. No, it's an ongoing challenge. You started off the interview when we spoke about migration. You pointed out that we have a growing population, which we absolutely do. Yeah. We're the fastest growing population in the European Union. And I think that's the backdrop and the context against which we have to look at housing. If you look at housing output this year and the back end of last year, quarter on quarter, month on month, the increases are there in terms of output in commencements and in completions and indeed in planning permissions lodged. I suppose we have to look at housing in terms of it being at a minimum a 3-year, if not a 4 to 5 year cycle from inception to ultimate delivery when keys are being handed over in terms of planning.
Where ye come in is the delivery, right? And ye facilitate the industry, and there's a lot of promises been made to speed up infrastructure, shall we say. The electricity, the roads, the sewerage and water to come into it. In Kenmare, for example, planning application, Kenmare, a town that hasn't had a private housing estate built in 20 years. There's applications going in now because the wastewater treatment plant, in fairness to the government, at a cost of millions, has been upgraded, about to be finished this summer. A new water treatment plant was put in 2018. Again, there's been about 40 million euros spent. However, the town is out of fresh water. A planning application granted yesterday, and the instruction was, yes, you can build these houses, but you cannot occupy them until the water is sorted. Now, Irish Water and a Kerry County Council planner said this in his decision, said they have a 5-year window or a 5-year time frame to deliver fresh water. Is that really good enough?
No, it's not.
5 years?
No, it's not.
To find it?
And
That's one example now of in Limerick, across the country, small wastewater treatment plants needed. There was lack of investment. I know you're running to catch up, but really, that's where the number is.
No, it's a very fair point. And during the last construction boom back in the day, there was a policy then, only it wasn't managed correctly. And that policy is back now, which will allow developers to, you know, do developer-led wastewater treatment systems. They were done back in the day, but they weren't managed. They were built, I suppose, poorly. Now there's better oversight. But that policy has now been restarted again by James Brown. And it's the right policy because there's such a demand on Irish Water on their capacity to deliver the bigger and the larger schemes. And there's so many demands right around Ireland. Now, we have increased significantly the capital funding being made available to Irish Water to do what they're supposed to do. But I think in parallel, allowing the developers to do their developer-led schemes to enable the planning permissions to be taken up, I think is a hugely significant step. I also want to say and remind our listeners here in Kerry and beyond, because a lot of people in Limerick, in my constituency, listen to Kerry Radio, that James Brown, we've been working hard with the Minister for Housing to update what's known as the Rural House Guidelines. And that's something which impacts me as a TD that represents Rural County Limerick, and obviously it impacts people here in Kerry. That will allow for a loosening of some of the criteria which has been prohibiting or disenabling the building of one-off rural houses across Ireland. And rural Ireland and one-off houses have a significant part to play in terms of addressing the housing crisis and addressing the increase in the housing stock that we need to house people. But there's a political point also, Gerry. Like the Department of Finance and the ESRI tell us that we need to be building about 50,000 houses per annum to deal with our population growth and with our demand. And the state can't do all of that on its own. We put about 9 billion euros a year into enabling housing, social, affordable, cost rental, and enabling private development. Private development and private investors in the housing market is hugely important. And, you know, the government are the only political parties who are in favour of trying to enable private investment to come into Ireland to build apartments, to build large-scale housing developments. The other political parties out there seem to think that to build the 50,000 houses, the state should be paying the 20 billion per annum.
They want a state construction company.
They want a state construction company.
And not
they want
private. Every house. They're saying that's the problem. That's why we are where we are.
Well,
too much reliance on
the private
sector.
The state is paying the taxpayer, the people listening to us speaking here this morning, the taxpayer is putting 9 billion a year into building houses. We need about 20 billion per year. The state hasn't got 20 billion per year to build houses. That's why we have to create the environment, the policy framework, and the certainty for the private sector, for private enterprise to be able to build private housing, also to sell to our local authorities, to sell to young couples, to families, the apartment blocks that we need in our cities, in Cork and Limerick and Dublin and Galway and these places. And that's a very, very important political point. There's political parties who are in the opposition who have no eye to private enterprise. And it's a reality right around the globe. right around the world.
You need
in any developed economy.
Final brief question. In a time there, there was a survey out of your party, parliamentary party members yesterday, the majority suggesting Micheál Martin should be transitioning out as Taoiseach of the country, as he will be anyway, but as leader of Fianna Fáil after the EU presidency. Would you agree, or what's your opinion on it?
The same article which was carried in, was written by Elaine Loughlin in the Irish Examiner, also acknowledges that Micheál Martin is the most popular Taoiseach and party leader in a long time. And I'm going to make a prediction here on Kerry Radio that Micheál Martin will lead us into the next general election, and we will emerge from the next general election as the largest party again, as we did on the last occasion under the leadership of Micheál Martin. So my own view is I don't want him to go anywhere, and I don't see him going anywhere. He's a substantial politician. You only have to look at his performances at leaders' questions in the Dáil week in, week out, where he absolutely wipes the floor with the opposition leaders in terms of the raising...
They'd have a different view on that.
Well, of course they would, but look, I mean, anybody's entitled to view it and judge it for themselves. I'm giving you my view in relation to it. You know, issues get raised, and he is continually pointing out the hypocrisy and the shallowness of policy and alternative which comes from the opposition parties.
Okay, all right. Minister Niall Collins, thanks very much for taking the time. You're on your way to the INEC for that citizenship ceremony. Thanks for talking to us in the programme this morning.